Blog Talk Radio.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Monday, November the 5th, as we like to do once a week. We'll be chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Obviously, the midterms is the topic of the day. In 24 hours or so, people will be voting. Many have already voted. I did. I voted early. I'm part of that 33 million people in the country who voted early. What that means, I guess we don't really know. We don't really know. People say one thing or another, but we don't really know. What I find most interesting and what I like to talk about with Bill today is these experts and how you have experts going all out saying this is going to be a Republican wave, Newt Gingrich, this fellow Mr. Root. Then I heard this morning Frank Luntz saying, you know, he's hedging his bets. He's all talking about turnout. Michael Barone, who's pretty good about this, he's saying we don't know until we know who turns out. And that's probably the bottom line. We don't know until we know who turns out. We're going to find out pretty soon. I guess within 36 hours, we'll know who turned out and who voted on the midterms. Mr. Kavanaugh is dealing with the aftermath of some of these false accusations. You know, it's sad to see what's happened. And I hope the people who made these false accusations are made to pay for this, because this is no one should have to go through something like this. The American economy had another great bit of news on Friday. It helps President Trump make his case in some of these states that he's going around. Well, I'm sorry. I think we lost the connection there. Bill, are you with me? I think we probably lost Bill as well. Anyway, we were talking to let's try to get Bill back on. We had a drop there in our connection. Let's try to get Bill back on. Bill, are you with me?
Yeah, we got cut off. We got cut off.
Yeah,
I don't know
what happened.
The demons are
in there. Did I lose you again? Oops, I think I just did. I apologize. Well, anyway, we'll wait for Bill to check in with us. But we're going to talk, of course, about the election. We're going to talk about the election, which will be happening on tomorrow in about 24 hours. People are going to be voting in the United States. Let me see if we can reconnect with Bill. This is unfortunate that these things are happening on this day. Let's see if we can
I think I'm back.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Bill. I apologize. We had a sudden collapse there of the connection. I have no idea why, but it happened. These things happen, but I don't think we missed a lot. Maybe we can figure out some way of working around that. But anyway, I was going to tell. I think you heard my introduction about the different topics and so on, the midterms, the early voting, Kavanaugh, and the U.S. economy.
Oh, sure, yes.
So lots of things to talk about. I apologize for the technical problem, but I have no idea what happened. We just, when you use the phone lines, I guess sometimes that can happen, but we're back on. It's great to have you back on. Before we get into all the current events, though, Bill, I just thought it would be fun to remember some things on this day. Nixon was elected in 1968 on this day, Richard Nixon. Ronald Reagan was elected, actually yesterday, in 1980, and President Obama, or Barack Obama, was elected on this day in 2008. So I guess a lot of dates to, you know, a lot of elections to remember this week, Bill.
That's very, very true, and I think we ought to look back. And one of the things that is saddest about looking back, and we talked about this before going on the air, is the deterioration of the American press. It mm-hmm. can't really be denied, although it is denied, of course, that, I mean, there was a time when at least most members of the press made an attempt to inform us. I think it was Frank Luntz who said yesterday that that people seem today to, media seems today to exist to reaffirm our opinions rather than challenge them with news. Mm-hmm. And I think, you go through this whole campaign, has there been one issue that has been discussed thoughtfully by anybody? There doesn't seem to be any need for it. Now, the press has always been accused of treating elections like horse races, that the only thing mm-hmm. that counted was who won. And I think that's a valid criticism, but it is an even more valid criticism today. There is really, first of all, the press bias toward the Democrats is overwhelming. It isn't even mm-hmm. a close call anymore. And I think it has to have some effect. And then the lack of real reporting, the lack of real discussion about foreign policy, for example, about issues like nuclear proliferation, issues like our system of education. Mm-hmm. Education hasn't been mentioned once. All they right. wanted, all they seem to do is shout at each other. As Frank Luntz said, it's the blame game. The Democratic Party's entire platform consists of hating Donald Trump. I think, ironically, Trump has been, in his own strange way, better on dealing with issues than anybody else.
Well, he's been running. I know he's getting a lot of criticism, but I actually think he's been running on ideas.
Yes.
And I actually think he's connecting with people because he's running on ideas. But 33 million people have already voted. Do you have early vote in New York, Bill?
I don't actually know, because when I vote, I vote at the polling booth. However, I believe, and I believe for the last few years, in going back, there's a kind of a semi-tradition among some journalists not to vote. I know that many would say, when I was in journalism more actively, that they don't vote because they don't want to participate in the process that they're covering. So I'm debating right. whether actually to vote tomorrow. It's in my area, it's almost meaningless. We all know who's going to win in advance. It's one of those areas. But I don't know if journalists should participate. I think the more you stay out of it, the better you are in terms of your journalistic ideals. But to the extent that journalistic ideals exist in our right. in our press today, but I don't know what the election means. I'm very apprehensive over it. I think it can turn out to be catastrophic. If you know, depending on who turns out to vote, it could be mm-hmm. close. The conventional wisdom is that the Democratic Party will win the House. There is no conventional wisdom as to how much they will win by. People mm-hmm. say it can be a few votes. It can be many, many votes. There have been elections, such as the election of 1942, some 11 months after Pearl Harbor, where you would have thought that the president would have maintained his position in the House because he was the commander-in-chief and we were in the largest war in history. He actually lost an enormous number of seats. People mm-hmm. blamed him for Pearl Harbor. People didn't like conditions. Very often, people go to the polls and do cantankerous things, especially against the party in the White House. So mm-hmm. there are all kinds of traditions and bases, but they go either way. I think that the greatest possible catastrophe, from my viewpoint, would be if the Republicans lose the Senate, and it is statistically mm-hmm. possible. It is statistically possible. I worry about it. Some of the last-minute polling is bizarre, but it shows tightening races and not tightening necessarily in our favor. But it depends on who turns out. The midterm elections are about turnout. It's very hard to poll a nation on midterm elections because they're all state polls, all state mm-hmm. Contests. But it's all turnout. Who gets the, who has the best ground game? Traditionally, that has been the Democrats, and they are very energized this year. However, Republicans were energized by the Kavanaugh debacle, and they came alive, and the Republicans have a better ground game this year than they have had before. So it really does depend on who comes out. I would not be shocked if the Democrats took the House, and in terms of President Trump, that could even in some strange way be a blessing in disguise, because he would then have a ready foil for the 2020 elections. So if they if the Democrats win the House by, let's say, 7 to 10 votes, they will control the committees. That is certainly sure. But they won't have a working majority because there are enough moderate Democrats who aren't going to fall on the sword for Maxine Waters. But
that's the problem.
Yes, that is the problem. And the problem is that the party right now is under the control of the leftists, and they don't give an inch. They don't give an inch. In the Senate, the races are very, very close, all dependent on turnout. I am heartbroken that in Arizona that Martha McSally is not well ahead. In fact, she's a little bit behind right now, running against an absolute nutbag. But from what I hear, the press in Arizona has fallen in with the national press as being liberal. And that they kind of have protected Kristen Sinema, who is an all-time left-winger who will not apologize for anything she's done in the past, but yet presents herself as a moderate. I certainly hope that we can hold on to Ted Cruz in Texas. I mean, it would be crazy.
Well, I think we will.
No, I
think we will. I'm a little bit, you know, I'm not, you know, there's I'm a little bit more optimistic about things perhaps than I think you're being cautiously optimistic. I am, too. I mean, I don't take anything for granted. But what I find most interesting about this midterm, Bill, is that generally on midterm elections, you kind of know, you get a sense of what wave will happen. I mean, in 2010, I think we all kind of knew that it was going to be a bad night for President Obama. We didn't know how bad it turned out to be. In 1994, you had a sense that it was going to be a good a bad day for President Clinton, but you didn't know how bad, or it turned out to be maybe worse than it was predicted. What I find most interesting about this election is that I don't know what wave. I mean, you could have two waves that basically show up, and you could have a Republican wave and a Democrat wave, and then I guess it depends, if I could use the analogy, it depends what wave has more water. What exactly happens. I think in Texas there's going to be a very heavy Republican turnout. I feel that way very strongly. And what happens in other states, well, I don't know. But here I think it'll be a heavy Republican turnout. By all indications, Abbott is going to win or be reelected for governor by a huge margin. And that, of course, is good news for Republicans. Beto is going to do better than at least better than any other Democrat in recent years, but I still not there's not a single poll, Bill, where he hits 50%. I mean, in every poll he's under 50%. Now, a new poll came out yesterday, which is kind of a joke. It's a left-leaning poll, and it's 49-49, and not even Real Clear Politics is showing that poll in their average because it's considered to be a left-leaning poll. So it's not, it doesn't seem to have the credibility. But you know, Ted Cruz has been over 50% at every poll that has been taken for the last 6 weeks. 54, 51, 54, 51, 52, 53, 54. And what that tells me, as much as you can believe polls, is that a majority, at least the people polled, believe that or will vote for him. So, you know, whether he wins by 3, whether he wins by 5 or even 10, some people are predicting that there's a hidden Cruz Republican poll. He's going to win. I think the Republicans apparently will win North Dakota. They'll win Missouri, from what I understand. But what I keep seeing over and over again in all of these elections, Bill, is the incumbents being under 50%, whether it's Tester in Montana, whether it's Connolly in Indiana. And that is usually a bad sign for the incumbent.
Yes.
So anyway, for whatever it's worth, I think we'll hold on to the Senate. The House is up in the air. But if the Democrats win by, let's say they pick up these 30 votes that everybody says they're going to pick up, Bill, that means they would have a majority of 7.
Yeah.
These people cannot agree on what pizza to order, unless it's called Hey Trump. Then they order pizza. I don't know. I just feel like Trump may end up winning if he gets the kind of House that I think he's going to get, which is a crazy majority, Democrat majority, that keeps making fools of themselves, Bill. I mean, can you imagine Maxine Waters running a finance committee, Bill?
Yes.
I mean, can you just even imagine that?
Well, it's interesting that for years in this country, beginning about 1938, the Congress was really run by a coalition of moderate Democrats and Republicans. Liberalism actually began to fade, and that coalition may be re-energized tomorrow if the Democrats take the House by only a small number of votes. There are enough moderate Democrats who are not going to fall on their sword for Maxine Waters. I mean, they run in a congressional district. They don't run nationally, and they may make common cause with some Republicans. I can't imagine them making common cause with left-wing Democrats. The problem tomorrow will be that no matter how the place is shaped, the number of kooky Democrats is going to increase because there are so many of them out there who are in charge of the Democratic Party. Now, and there may even be a few elected to the U.S. Senate. This woman in Arizona is a complete crackpot, and I cannot believe, as I look at the last-minute polls and the last-minute news reports, that a wonderful person like Martha McSally, who has served the country so well, first American woman to fly in combat, could be defeated by a woman who once said that she had no problem with Americans joining the Taliban, and who after 9/11 campaigned against the war in a tutu. I mean, what has gone wrong in Arizona? Obviously, something has gone wrong in Arizona. There are other races. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, while you were speaking there, I just checked out a couple of things from Arizona because I was curious, because I agree with you. I mean, this lady is just, I mean, I don't know how anybody can vote for that lady in Arizona. But here in the last 5 polls that have been taken in Arizona, there's a tie. Sinema up by 3, McNally up by 6, Sinema up by 1, McSally up by 1. The average of those 5, for whatever it's worth, has Sinema up by 1. So that's a turnout election. When you're up by 1,
that's
basically turnout. I mean, that all comes down to the turnout. There's really nothing else you can say but turnout. If you go to, you also mentioned Tennessee, and that, that would be a crime if she loses, because that would be a loss, or a net gain by the Democrats. But just looking a little bit here at Tennessee, in the last few polls, she is leading plus 6, plus 8, plus 9, plus 4, and then there's a tie, and then plus 5. So they put her up by 5. That sounds to me, plus 5, I don't know, I kind of get the feeling that's outside the margin of error. So that sounds to me like she will be, she's also over 50% in 3 of the last 5 polls, and that makes me feel a little bit more comfortable. So anyway, I don't know. We may be revisiting polls after tomorrow.
Yes.
There may be.
Well, that'll be interesting to see which pollsters are the most accurate. Because Rasmussen, who is the discredited pollster, CNN announced yesterday, we don't use them because they have a bad reputation. That means they took Republican, which at CNN means a bad reputation. But Rasmussen today has, as you know, the president at 50%, whereas at this point of approval, at this point in Obama's term, he was only at 45%. So he's actually, at least in the Rasmussen poll, outpolling Obama. And the Rasmussen poll today has the generic ballot tied. Now, it is true that historically their results have tilted more toward the Republicans than perhaps other polls have. We'll see, though, they may turn out to be the accurate poll.
Right, but that's true. And my question with, you know, people who say that Rasmussen is Republican, were they saying that when they predicted that Obama would be reelected or elected?
Yes.
I mean, were they? Because as I recall, I mean, yes, they were founded by Scott Rasmussen, who I guess they say is a Republican. And they do use a method of polling that is not the traditional over the phone. As I understand, I could be wrong, but I think that's the push button type approach where they call somebody on the phone and you answer on the phone rather than by talking to a human being. Now,
yes.
The traditional over the phone approach, the problem with that approach is that you have to call like 30 people to get one answer.
But that's
that
right.
That does not
yeah.
make it very valid. So I don't know. I think that the problem with all of this, polling, and the next time we chat on Sunday, I think we will have the picture in front of us, as they say. We'll know who won the game. There won't be any more guessing, but I can see a lot of scenarios tomorrow. I can see a Republican wave. I can see a Democrat wave. I can see, like you were saying, the House and the Senate going Democrat. I can also see a scenario where the House stays Republican and the Senate and the Republicans pick up a few seats. So it's all up in the air, Bill, and it's all about turnout. You know, as I was telling a friend yesterday after church, he was asking me about it, about the election, and I said, tell me who's going to turn out, and I'll tell you who's going to win, which is kind of a silly way to answer it. But, yeah,
yes.
Tell me who's going to turn out, and I'll tell you who's going to win, because I think it's all about turnout, and I'm not sure who's – I do know, and again, this is not an opinion, but this is based on elections, that Republicans tend to turn out on election day. That's what I keep hearing over and over and over again.
Yes, that's true. They have a higher rate of turnout. You know, many of the Democratic groups that they depend on, African Americans, young people, especially young people have a tendency not to vote.
That's right. That's right.
You know,
so
and there was even an article last week about Beto saying he has great appeal to people who don't vote in Texas.
They love him everywhere, but you know,
yes.
Again, as I said before, he's, you know, my gut feeling is that he will be the first Democrat in 30 years, actually since Lloyd Benson won the Senate here. He will be the in 1988. He will be the first Democrat in 30 years to be in the good, to be over 45%. I can see him maybe getting 45 or 46, so that Cruz wins 53-46, something like that, even 52-47. I can see that scenario given the tremendous effort that they have made to get people to turn out to vote. I mean, you got to hand it to them. They had all the money, and so they've made a big effort to turn out. I can also see a situation on the Wednesday after the election, if let's say the Republicans do well. I can see also a lot of Democrats asking the question, what did we get for spending $70 million in Texas?
Because that's right.
They're spending a lot of money on this Beto thing.
Yes.
And if it doesn't work out, that's a lot of money that could have been helping Nevada and Arizona, Bill.
Sure. Look, that's the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party mm-hmm. has become the children's party. It's the children's
mm-hmm.
express. You know, they've been working on trying to be that for a long time.
Sure.
They, you know, and they suddenly link up to a name, Beto O'Rourke, who his name isn't Beto, of course, as we all know.
That's right.
And he looks like, and he reminds me of Kennedy. They say it's the second coming of Kennedy. No, it's not the second coming of Kennedy. First of all, Jack Kennedy would have squashed Beto with his thumb. Robert Kennedy was not necessarily the kind of role model you would necessarily want in politics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these were Northeasterners, and their appeal was basically in the Northeast. But, I mean, I've heard Beto speak a couple of times. He obviously models himself after Robert Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
He even has the same speech pattern. It's a joke.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost the kind of thing you make a Hollywood movie out of. And yet, they have flooded Texas, as you know, with money from out of state, from Hollywood and New York.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's much Texas money there, But they thought this guy was the new great Democratic hope, that he's a Texas liberal who's like Kennedy, and he's young and he's handsome and he just has this natural appeal to people. You know, Jack Kennedy once made a comment about what was called in the 1960 election the jumpers. They were the teenage girls who would go along the parade route when Kennedy was coming through and jump up and down when they saw him. And he said to one of his aides, "I wish some of them were old enough to vote."
Right,
Kennedy
exactly.
had enough smarts to know.
Right, but when I see all these rallies at the universities with Beto, my reaction was somewhat similar to the late President Kennedy. My reaction was, do they live in Texas? A lot of these, you know, we have a lot of people from other states who come here to school, and you have to wonder how many of them are actually from Texas. Bill, let me take a little break, and then when we come back, we'll get into some other topics that are out there in the news. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, talking to our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We've been talking a lot about the midterms, and basically, I think, Bill, you would agree with me that until we know what the turnout is, it's kind of hard to tell how it's all going to turn out, if I could put it that way.
Yes.
Because the turnout right now is really the key. But what I do find interesting, and I said this before, at the time that we're having the technical problem, so let me say it again just in case it didn't go out, that what I find interesting is the experts seem to be everywhere on this election. You mentioned Newt Gingrich. You mentioned this fellow Root. Now, he's not an expert necessarily, but he's out there predicting a huge Republican day. And then others who are hedging their bets. Tell me what the turnout is, Bill, and I guess I'll tell you how it's all going to turn out. And we'll know probably in about 30 hours. We may get a sense of turnout earlier than that in the early afternoon, Bill.
Well, yes. And you know, what's very interesting about that is that some of the experts who really are experts are saying that we should not assume that people will vote the way the experts think they're going to vote. There are some people who believe that there is a secret black and Hispanic vote for Trump and for Republicans that may show itself for the first time. Now, I know there's a lot of controversy over this because there was a Rasmussen poll, which was not necessarily accurate, showing Trump with 40% support among blacks. Now, many black leaders disparage that, say it's a Republican poll, and that actually support is about 13%. Well, I don't think you get from 13 to 40%. I mean, it's probably somewhere in between. But any important change in the black vote for the Republican Party would be dramatically important because that is a base vote for the Democratic Party. Also, there are certainly polls that show increasing Republican support in some Hispanic communities, so people may not vote the way we expect them to vote. By the way, that also goes in reverse. There are many traditional Republican women, for example, in the suburbs who apparently don't like Trump and are ready to vote against him. Remember, there's a faction in the Republican Party that is never Trump. And they basically want him out. Some of them really dislike him. So we don't know. You can even have exit polling tomorrow, and it may not be. People may not be telling you the truth. It's a very, very strange election.
It's interesting, Bill, because I'm looking right now at we were talking before about Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz is +8, +7, +6, +5, +10, and then there's an Emerson poll that shows him +3. But in every one of those cases, he's over 50%. and O'Rourke is at 43, 45, 45, 46, 42, 47. So, again, for whatever it's worth, it's showing me a timeline here or a working line here that he's over 50 and he is in the mid-40s. So whatever that means, I feel comfortable about Cruz winning. So, you know, we'll see how it turns out. A couple of issues, Bill, that I wanted to get your thoughts on. We'll probably have a lot more to say about the election the next time we chat on Sunday, because at that time we'll have the results. And by the way, something else Newt Gingrich said about the election, which is very interesting, and I want to get your take on this. He said that there may be a lot of these contests where they may be subject to runoffs. So we may not even know the results of the House, especially, even for several days, Bill. Apparently some of the races in California are very close. Some of the races in the central part of the country are very close. Some of the races here in Texas could be close. So we may not know the results for a week or 2 weeks, Bill.
Oh, that's very, very true. And you have recounts, and then the Mississippi situation, which is bizarre. I don't even understand what's going on in Mississippi. They're going to pick two senators, one to fill out a term and one to have a new term, and they have some kind of a strange process there in terms of runoffs. So maybe by this afternoon I'll be able to figure out exactly what is going on down there. And also, remember, you have the state of Florida, which has a very, very strange history of recounts. We remember 2000. I would love to see Rick Scott in the U.S. Senate, the governor of Florida, who's done an outstanding job, and he's running against an incumbent senator who's tired and whose great claim to fame is that he was once an astronaut, back in the pre-space age or something. And he doesn't really do much in the Senate except vote for Chuck Schumer. I would love to see Scott. He's a very dynamic guy. A thing that we ought to note is, and this is really important, one of the most important races in the country will be the gubernatorial race in Florida. Gillum, who is sponsored by George Soros and Tom Starr, is one of the most extreme candidates we have seen in a governorship election in recent years, and he is ahead in the polls. If he wins tomorrow, he will instantly be a national figure and will probably wind up as the vice presidential candidate. And this is a guy who's anti-cop. He is the mayor of the city in Florida with the highest crime rate. He wants to raise corporate taxes by 40% in Florida, which will drive business out of Florida. He is a hardline, no-nonsense progressive who can do enormous harm. And he is a man who he is an African American, which is fine, but he is a man who plays the race card every minute. Everything is race,
right. No,
race,
I agree.
Race.
And he also has legal problems, too, from what I understand.
Yeah, many, 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 apparently.
Yeah, that could come back to haunt him if he gets elected. Bill, a couple of other stories that I wanted to touch on, not about the election, but about other issues that are very important. One is what is happening, of course, with the American economy. I mean, the jobs picture on Friday was fabulous. The overall economy seems to be doing quite well. People are apparently crediting President Trump for that, which is, again, one of the reasons I feel optimistic in some of those red states. It may not mean anything in California. It may not mean anything in a Democrat district. It may not mean anything in New York. But the election, I mean, you have a lot of red states with elections here, and I think this is probably going to help President Trump in those states. But the state of the American economy is amazing, Bill. I mean, the jobs numbers we're putting out, it just seems like, you know, whatever is going on, it's working very well for the American people, Bill.
Well, it seems to be. Now, the Democrats are trying to claim that it's only working for some people, but no, the economy, the unemployment rate, for example, among blacks is the lowest that I think it has ever been, or certainly the lowest that has been in recent history, and I think there is an appreciation in that community for what Trump is doing. You know, one of the things that's very, very important for people to understand is that in these groups, these subgroups, minority groups, the conventional wisdom about them often comes from leaders, from journalists interviewing leaders. Leaders often don't necessarily represent their people. They may represent their own interests. And so when leaders tell you something, it may not actually be the truth. It may be something that simply reflects what they think is good for them. So we have to be very careful about judging what is happening in these communities. You know, we've been told for years, I mean, really, for years, that, well, soon it'll be a majority-minority country, and it will look very different politically. And my answer to that is, why do you assume minorities love each other? Why do you assume they'll all march off together? They may not. They may march in very different directions. And what is going on in these communities may not be what the leader says is going on.
Well, and Bill, on that point, just this morning before we started doing our podcast, I was listening to an interview with an amazing candidate in Michigan, John James, the Republican.
Yeah, wonderful guy.
God, is he? I mean, there's a case. I mean, there's a case of a guy. If he pulls off that upset, he is. I mean, he's on his way to a national ticket pretty soon. Maybe not 2020, but I can see him in 2024. But he was saying exactly what you're saying, Bill. He says, I'm walking into he was born in Detroit, from what I understand. His family had a business there. This is, you know, just a wonderful profile of a man. He was a West Point graduate. I mean, just every possible thing that you would want in a candidate, good family man, good businessman, everything else. And he was saying exactly what you were saying, that many times in these communities, the people don't necessarily vote like the leaders. And they don't necessarily tell a pollster, yes, I'm going to vote for Trump, because they don't know who's on the line. It could be, you know, somebody who could do them harm, you know. And I mean, look, I know that's cynical, but that happens. And but then when they go vote, they'll vote differently. He has taken that race, Bill. I guess it was 20 points apart. It used to be 13. Now it's within 6 from what he was saying on the interview. That, you know, that's turnout again. That's a turnout election again. I could see that one being really tight on election night. He may not win, but that would, I mean, if he does, that would be a huge upset, Bill.
Well, it would be. That would be a miracle, and that would be one of those miracles we relish, because I've seen him interviewed so many times, and he is – there's a guy who is he's not only a winner, he's a patriot. There's nothing cynical about him. What you see is what you get, and there is a man that any community could be proud of and any country could be proud of. Stabenow is ahead, I think. I mean, you know, there's an absolute corpse in the U.S. Senate. I mean, I don't know what she does, but she is. Incumbency has great value, especially in midterms.
Sure.
People know the name, but I think that if enough people come out and see who John James really is and understand his potential, you could have a miracle. It seems not likely in this election cycle, and unfortunately, the Republican Party does not have a great history of taking a candidate and nurturing that candidate. I mean, here's a guy, he may lose, but if President Trump was smart, he would be on the phone the next day offering John James the next big job that opens up, because he could do it, and he is a person who can be the future of the Republican Party.
Oh, absolutely. He's so well-spoken, so telegenic. I mean, the guy is And there is substance to him, which is the difference with Beto. Beto is telegenic and he speaks well, but there's nothing. With James, you know, there is something. There's substance to his career. Speaking of James, one of the reasons he was being interviewed this morning, aside from the update on the election, he was also reacting to what was apparently a joke. I didn't watch it, but apparently there was a joke on Saturday Night Live.
Yes.
About a veteran who is running for office who lost an eye. And there was a joke
about
that.
Running for office in Texas.
Yes, exactly. And the fellow is apparently lost an eye in Iraq or Afghanistan or something. There's a joke about it. And it's like, it really shows you how disconnected from reality some of these people are, that they would, you know, I don't know, maybe this joke just happened. You know, sometimes jokes happen that they're not planned, you know. But you would think that there'd be something inside of a person that says, you know, we don't joke about people who lose their eye in war. You just
don't do that.
And yet they did it. People were applauding in the audience, Bill. That's the other thing I don't get.
Well, it's juvenile. The maturity level in this country is so low. You know, one of the things that we should talk about this for a minute. First of all, this was an NBC show. NBC should have immediately apologized. The comedian, if you want to call him that, should have immediately said it came out wrong. You know, I have great respect for, you know, anyone who serves in combat. Neither of them has done so. Now, the candidate himself has been interviewed. He said he's not asking for an apology. It was just just bad taste. He shouldn't have to ask for an apology. That apology should have been forthcoming from NBC. When I worked at NBC, that which was years ago, I mean, we're talking about really years ago, this would have never happened. And had it happened, there would have been an immediate statement. The network itself is responsible. NBC is responsible for every word that goes out over its air. And there was no leadership. There is no leadership at NBC. But it is outrageous that a comment like that, it was a stupid offhand comment. He said, well, he lost an eye or something in some war. Or so, you know, just a flippant, stupid comment. But it should have been taken care of. And these things go by. And at one time, there was something called standards and practices that would have never allowed this to happen.
Well, common sense, Bill, tells you don't crack a joke about – I mean, comedy is comedy, but there are certain limits to comedy, just like you would never crack a joke about a veteran who – I mean – can you imagine somebody cracking a joke about a veteran in World War II who lost his arm, or who in Korea, or even Vietnam, or maybe Vietnam, but even in Vietnam we didn't hear something like that. And it just seemed to me that this is in many ways what is wrong with the Democrat Party. These people live in the Democrat Party. This is no longer another party. These people are in the Democrat Party, and I suppose their timing was not good. 2 days before the election, that's probably not a good time to crack a joke like this. But I don't care so much about the election. I just wish that this fellow was reprimanded, and as you say, that NBC would apologize for this and say this is unacceptable. We don't crack jokes about veterans, period, and leave it at that, Bill. But apparently that has not happened yet, Bill.
No, apparently not. I think there is fear of these networks, of young people, fear of the political left. I think there is fear of executives' wives who want to be invited to the right cocktail parties in Manhattan. And I think there's a lot of that out there. You know, I remember when how can I forget his name? He was Dan Quayle.
Dan Quayle made a comment about
the Murphy Brown show, and that it was encouraging out of birth wedlock. They had all the cast members stand behind Candace Bergen on a subsequent program, who made this pompous statement that there are all kinds of families, and then there's this and that. And Mr. Vice President, you are wrong. You shouldn't have said it. Well, it later turned out that Quayle was right, that in fact this kind of thing was encouraging, and that out-of-birth wedlock was a serious problem in the United States. And nobody ever apologized to Dan Quayle for the way he was treated. And it's the same thing today. These are liberal organizations. And somebody made a very good point also, just an interesting discussion here in New York, even in the New York Times of all places, and they made the point that the left has found it impossible to comment on the Pittsburgh massacre last week and use the term anti-Semitism. They just make a general comment about another gun attack, in a place of worship. And the reporter for the Times was pointing out the fact that in the last year there have been a number of anti-Semitic attacks in New York City, not one of them traced to a right-winger. Not one of them. It's always somebody else, and yet the left wing cannot admit it. They cannot admit it. They're just the left is juvenile. It's selfish. It is very self-centered. There have been a number of stories about the reaction to Pittsburgh that have pointed this out, that the great support given to the parishioners in Pittsburgh have come from the American people, but from the American political establishment on the left, nothing, absolutely nothing.
Bill, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, I want to chat with you a little bit about the latest going on with Justice Kavanaugh, where some women are actually backing down and saying, no, we made it up. Very interesting situation. We'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Monday, November the 5th, chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, I want to talk a little bit about Justice Kavanaugh. Obviously, he's in the court, in the Supreme Court, and I'm happy for that. That's one of the great accomplishments, really, of President Trump, putting two wonderful justices in the court. And, of course, with Mr. Kavanaugh, we all remember the women stepping up, saying he did this and that. Well, it turns out that one of them has admitted admitted that she made it up, and that apparently another one has too. And it's like, I don't know if he can file a defamation suit. I know he's a public person, and that's almost impossible. But clearly there was intent here to do him harm, so that could prove to be enough to get a defamation suit. But overall, I mean, it just no one should ever be put through this, where people lie about you, not just about, you know, not just a simple lie that maybe you cheated on an exam. We're talking here about raping two women, and that's pretty false, pretty rough accusation about someone, and it's hard to make that up.
Well, yes, and that's a very grave charge. I mean, rape is not a minor charge. If some woman had come forward and said, look, he never did anything to me, but I just didn't like him, that's all right. Okay, he didn't like him. But when you make charges like that, that next to murder, rape is the most serious charge, and you don't do that. These women should be prosecuted for what they did. I don't know under what statute they can be prosecuted. Maybe filing a false police report, or now he will not sue them. He could probably sue them civilly, but as a Supreme Court justice, I doubt if he even want to get involved in it again. But I think slowly but surely he is being vindicated, and we point out that the Senate, the Judiciary Committee, yes, it is under Republican leadership, but they came out with a report saying there were no credible charges brought against this man, and that's true.
Mm-hmm.
This business of believe the woman. That's a master race theory. If you believe the woman, you automatically don't believe the man, which means you are judging people by biological identity. That is a master race theory, and it leads to bad things. We shouldn't be doing
right.
it. We should say, if you have a charge against someone, let's sit down, let's work out what you can bring in terms of evidence. I mean, there are good lawyers and good DAs in this country who do that every day. In this case, at the last minute, after the hearings were completed, Professor Ford, who has now disappeared within
with $1 million, yes.
Yeah,
she got $1 million somehow,
Yes, from GoFundMe.
Yeah.
It's interesting, isn't it, that money was raised on behalf of Judge Kavanaugh. I think $600,000. In a GoFundMe account that he did not set up, of course, and he has asked that it be given back or given to a charity, but that he will have nothing to do with it. That's the right thing to do.
He's got more class, Bill. This Justice Kavanaugh has more class than all of these other people times 100, because even this lady Ford, who, yes, she was credible. I'll give her that. Something happened to this lady. I'm not going to deny that it didn't happen. But, you know, I just feel like my reaction to all of it, Bill, is not so much partisan. It's really not so much about Kavanaugh. My reaction is that no one should ever have to be put through this. No one, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, should ever have to go through this where accusations like this are made against you at the last minute, and then we find out later that the accusations are not true. And I'll go out on the limb and say something. I wouldn't be surprised if down the road Mrs. Ford says, you know what, I'm not sure it was really him, and then drop that one too. But who's going to tell his wife? Who's going to tell his daughters? That's what makes me angry, because his daughters are going to go to college in a few years, and there's going to be some idiotic professor who's going to talk about the guy in the Supreme Court justice who raped a woman in the backseat of the car,
That's
Bill.
Right. Well, you've heard it already. There are people who say that if Roe v. Wade comes up before the Supreme Court, any decision they make against it would not be valid because there are two rapists on the Supreme Court. They include Justice Thomas, who wasn't even charged with rape. He was charged with making some salacious comments to a staff aide. But it doesn't matter to these people. Truth means nothing because it has been pounded into their head that there was one of the philosophers of the New Left of the 1960s, Herbert Marcuse, said the truth is what supports progressive causes. In other words, if it supports the cause, it's truthful. And that is
right.
A sad commentary on what our educational system has become. We may lose our democracy in this country to our educational system, and nobody wants to talk about it.
No, nobody does, because you're a racist if you bring it up or something, or they accuse you of something like that. Well, Bill, I have a funny feeling that I know what you're going to be writing about over the next few days, and that's the midterm, and we're going to be looking forward to your analysis. I hope it turns out well. I hope it turns
out
well.
Yes, so do I.
I have a 51-49 feeling that it will. I have about a 60-40 feeling that we're going to hold on to the Senate, the House, 40-60 that the Democrats are going to, or 60% chance the Democrats are going to win, but it'll be by a small margin. So my sense is that when we chat next Sunday night, the Republicans will have the Senate, the Democrats will have the House by very few votes, and President Trump would have tweeted something already about Maxine Waters running the Finance Committee, Bill.
Well, yes, I can look. all the American people have to do is get a whiff of the new House under Democratic rule. You got Maxine running the Finance Committee. You've got Jerry Nadler in New York, who is the most liberal Democrat, actually not a bad guy, by the way. He's not an indecent man, but he is really a committed progressive. He represents Ground Zero, actually, in Congress, the area where the attacks occurred. You would never know it. You would never know it. He's not an evil man, but he has already said he's going to go after impeachment. He's going to toe the party line, and you're going to have all these committee chairmen who really are nutbags, and they come from these safe Democratic districts, and the American people will see that. Now, as we, as people have said, a Democratic House may be, for Donald Trump, a great blessing in disguise. You know, he could put all the blame on them when things go wrong.
Right. Well, that's it. But I think that what's going to happen, and you said it earlier, I think that many of these centrist Democrats are going to end up maybe leaving, not officially, but working with a Republican minority, which is going to be -7 or something, or -10. So we'll look forward to it. As I said, I don't think it's over yet. I wouldn't be surprised if next Sunday night we're talking about a Republican House and a Republican Senate. I don't think that's out of the question, or even the other way, a Republican or a Democrat House or a Democrat Senate. So we'll just have to figure it out over the next few days, Bill. As always, thank you for your time, and thank you for the great work that you do at Urgent Agenda. And I'm looking forward already to your Wednesday morning post about the election. I'm looking forward. I think that's going to be an interesting one that you'll get to write, Bill.
I'm looking forward to it, too. Now, of course, if we lose, I'll be writing it in my bunker somewhere in a western state, but let's be at least somewhat optimistic.
I think so, and I'm always optimistic, and I think this time I'm cautiously optimistic about what's going to happen. Have a great day, Bill, and I look forward to our next chat on Sunday.
I certainly do. I certainly do.
All right. Thank you so much. Our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. As I said, over the next couple of days, I'm sure Bill will be writing quite a bit, particularly on Wednesday morning, about what's happening in this election. I'm cautiously optimistic. That's as much as I will say. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful day. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.